So that's song number 3 out of 7 for this Dainya section. I'm going to go back to song number 1. There's some... And just read the... I'll just read the translations. This is the one that starts, Bulia Tumari. So it's basically a confession by the author, Bhaktivinod, that I've foolishly directed my life. He goes back to still within his mother's womb. So I'm reading the translation for this first song, which you don't have in front of you. I forsook you, O Lord, and came to this world of pain and sorrow. Now I submit my tale of woe at your lotus feet. While still in the unbearable fetters of my mother's womb, I saw you before me. You revealed yourself, but briefly, and then abandoned this poor servant of yours. At that moment I swore to worship you after taking birth, but birth came, and with it the network of worldly illusion, which robbed me of all good sense. So, in Vidyavinod's explanation of these songs, he makes reference to the third canto description of the, what's it called, the path of the living entity or something like that. When the living entity is within the womb of the mother, sometimes consciousness of God becomes awakened. Some number of months when consciousness is dormant, and then consciousness becomes awake. And it's very, very painful and very, very difficult for the living entity within the womb of the mother. And sometimes the living entity has like a breakthrough and they see the Supreme Lord. And they offer prayers to the Supreme Lord. And as an interesting little footnote here, Jiva Goswami, in his commentary on that verse, or in his Bhakti Sandarbha, he comments on that there's even three different categories of living entities that become awake to the presence of God while within the womb of the mother. He comments as follows. According to the Nirukta Shastra, three kinds of souls within the womb of their mother who realize this presence of God. Some remembers, there are in three categories. Some remembers previous lifetimes. Some others become revived in their understanding of Sankhya Yoga. And some actually become transfixed on the form of the Lord in devotion. There are some souls amongst those that are very, very fortunate, like Parikshit Maharaj, who after birth remained in the position of devotees. But here, Bhaktivinoda Thakur counts himself as one who didn't. And then he describes, as a fondled son in the lap of relatives, I passed my time smiling and laughing. My parents' affection helped me to forget the pangs of birth, and I thought the world very nice. Day by day I grew and soon began playing with other boys. Shortly my powers of understanding emerged. I read and studied my lessons incessantly, traveling from place to place. Proud of my education, I grew wealthy and maintained my family with undivided attention. O Lord Hari, I forgot you. Now in old age, Bhaktivinoda is sad. He weeps. I failed to worship you, O Lord. Instead, pass my life in vain. What will be my fate now? And then this Jovana Jakona, the translation. Do we have that here? Yeah. When I was young, I greatly desired to earn money at that time, bearing in mind the codes of religion. I took a wife. Together we set up as should be A. You know, best you can correct. We set up a household, wasted much time, had many sons and daughters. My heart grew heavy. The burden increased day by day. I felt my life at a standstill. Old age came, grabbed me, and made my mind fickle and disturbed. Diseases trouble me now, and constant anxiety has made me feverish. My heart burns from lack of satisfaction, and I see no way out. All is darkness, and I'm very much afraid. In the grip of the material life, realizing the mistaken shelter that material life offers. The current of this worldly river is strong and relentless. A frightening, gloomy death approaches. How I wish I could give up my worldly attachments. I would worship you, O Lord, but it is a useless hope. Now please hear me, O Lord, for I'm utterly helpless. Bhaktivinoda says, without your mercy, everything is lost. Please give me the shelter of your lotus feet. Very strong, huh? So he's portraying himself as a typical materialist who, from the first song, within the womb of his mother, received some mercy by the Lord, showing himself, praying to the Lord, but then getting caught up in, much like what Prahlad Maharaj describes, the stages of life where Maya keeps one busy at every step. And now at the tail end of his life, there's nothing. And how filled with grief and anguish he is, but attached, because that's all he's known, and so he has, I have no other shelter but you. Humility. Two other songs in this humility section, and I'm not sure what's on the recording because I'm not organized. I'm going to read the translation of the fourth song. It starts with Amar Jivan, and the translation reads, I am an imperious, probably means impious. I am an impious sinner and have caused others great anxiety and trouble. I have never hesitated to perform sinful acts for my own enjoyment. Devoid of all compassion, concerned only with my own selfish interests, I am remorseful in seeing others happy. I am a perpetual liar, and the misery of others is the source of great pleasure for me. The material desires within the core of my heart are unlimited. I am wrathful, devoted to false pride and arrogance, intoxicated by vanity, just berating himself left and right, and bewildered by worldly affairs. Envy and egotism are the ornaments I wear. Ruined by laziness and sleep, I resist all pious deeds, yet I am very active and enthusiastic to perform wicked acts. For worldly fame and reputation, I engage in the practice of deceitfulness. Thus, I am destroyed by my own greed, and I am always lustful. A vile, wicked man such as this, rejected by godly people, is a constant offender. I am such a person, devoid of all good works, forever inclined toward evil, worn out and wasted by various miseries. Now in old age, deprived of all means of success, humbled and poor, Bhaktivinod submits his tale of grief at the feet of the Supreme Lord. So now the last one, I hope that's what's on the recording here, is the end of the Danya. You can see that how he's doing this. He's assessing himself in a very self-critical way. By the process, he's abandoning, he's seeing through the way of material life and abandoning it. It's preparing the way for his dedication of himself to the Supreme Lord. So, let's see. The next song that you have, it's not here. To do is get the songs that are here in a handout form. Close the curtain. Yeah. You see one guy. I'll just complete the last one. Amona Durmati is a very, very nice song, and I have another recording of it where it's being sung, not like this in a very formal bhajan, but in a informal and ecstatic bhajan. And the system with these songs, the way of singing the message, it comes like they take one stanza and just repeat it and repeat it and repeat it, and you know, because it's their language, the Bengali language, the kirtaniers just become absorbed in that mood. So this it becomes an ecstatic expression, not just an intellectual exercise, through the medium of song. So Emona Dormati Samsara Bhitare Poriya Achino Ami. A wicked mind brought me into this world, O Lord, but one of your pure and elevated devotees has come to bring me out. So that's the first line that's repeated over and over again. My position is one of, by choice, one of wickedness, but you are very kind, you send someone, your confidential associate, to pull me out of that condition. He saw me, so fallen and wretched, took pity and came to me saying, O humble soul, please listen to this good tidings. for it will gladden your heart. Sri Krishna Chaitanya has appeared in the land of Navadvip to deliver you. He has safely conducted many miserable souls such as you across the sea of worldly existence to fulfill the promise of the Vedas. The son of a Brahmana bearing the name of Mahaprabhu, of golden complexion, has descended with his brother, the Avadhuta Nityananda. Together they have overwhelmed all of Nadia with divine ecstasy. Sri Chaitanya, who is Krishna himself, the son of Nanda, has saved the world by freely distributing his own holy name. Go also and receive your deliverance, O Lord. Hearing those words, Bhaktivinoda has come weeping to the soles of your lotus feet and tells the story of his life. So nice, huh? So, that's a very nice song to learn and sing, especially appreciating the meaning of the song itself. Within the song, the components of humility are there, of abandoning material shelter, accepting the mercy of the representative of Lord Chaitanya, and glorifying Lord Chaitanya and learning from him the way of surrender. So that at the end of that section of songs, and next comes dedication of the self. So tomorrow, when I'm more organized, we'll sing that song together. It's very, very nice. See what else we have here. Yeah. Back to this. First song, Bulia Tumare Sangsara Ashiya Pe Nana Binda Vyata. So, after he took his birth, after praying to the Supreme Lord, he became interested in his studies. So this is relevant for all of you. The comment that Bhaktivinoda makes about this song is the way of material life, something that holds one apart from the process of surrender, is being held captive by material knowledge, and the sense of security that having material knowledge brings. It's a false sense of security. Jada Vidya, or in the language of Isha Upanishad, Avidya. There's Vidya and culture of knowledge and the culture of nescience. So in the culture of nescience, taking shelter of mundane knowledge brings about attachment to things of this world. It's a cause of atheism. These are very strong statements. So, in his Sharanagati, the first of the Sharanagati songs, he describes in his childhood how he did like that. But and that paved the way for the whole rest of his lifetime of also being without the shelter of the Lord. So the way of Sharanagati requires recognizing that false shelter and casting aside false shelter, or the sense of well-being derived from limited knowledge or speculative knowledge, because at least in the modern sense this is the means of my maintenance instead of the Lord is my maintainer. It's a deliberate atheistic endeavor. It may not be deliberate on the part of the person who's taking up their studies, but it's deliberate on the part of the atheist to promote it in that way. It's diabolical. You separate church and state, and this function of state is education, and the function of church doesn't fit into education. It's promoting atheism through compulsory education and valuing education, which in this world is very, very valued. People pay a lot of money for it and they undergo a lot of sacrifices for it because it represents something for them. Now that doesn't mean, so we're not impersonalists and we don't say make it zero, but we say see it for what it is and spiritualize it as much as possible. Some embellishments that to add to this, there's some verses in Stotra Ratna by Jimunacharya that compare very much with these verses that we just read on humility, and the appeal of Jimunacharya for shelter at the Lord's feet instead of shelter in nescience. O Hari, this is Sotra Ratna number 45. O Hari, out of your sheer mercy, please make me your own. I, who am the repository of 1,000 offenses, who have fallen. Being helpless, have sought refuge at your feet. Similar. Very someone who's lusty is bewildered, and somebody who's angry is bewildered, and somebody who's greedy is bewildered. That's what you mean. So there's some overlap, but bewildered. So lust, anger, and greed, they're the three gates to hell identified in Bhagavad Gita. And bewildered is it's in degrees. Bewildered is I'm unclear what to do, and more bewildered is I'm accepting what is not to be done is what to do, and more bewildered is I'm gung-ho fired up And then finally, I'm a fanatic to do what is not to be done in the name of what is to be done. So let's say for a devotee's bewilderment is more, it's on the gentler end. It's, although I know that I know what is to be done, I can't keep my intelligence fixed on what is to be done because I get distracted by sense gratification and moods of independence from the spiritual authority that's keeping me uplifted in this condition of well-being. My rebellious nature is acting up and I'm bewildered. So I can't take firm action and whatever happens. I can't take firm action, appropriate and firm action. And yes, it's fair to say that that's caused by, or you know, most likely, lust or anger or and or greed are an aggravated state. It's describing the function of the intelligence is to discern one thing from another thing. The capacity of the intelligence is blocked. I can't properly discern. So in the mode of passion, one is confused. In the mode of ignorance, one has it backwards. Bewildered and more bewildered. Out of the position of goodness, where intelligence is clear. I know what is to be done, and I'm undertaking that which is to be done. From him or from you?
From him.
Okay.
So, what is that exactly where one should focus?
Want to give me some choices? He does that all the time. You're giving some examples. Should we focus on the mood of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and the genuine expression that he has, or should we focus on the fact that we are so far away from that genuine mood of, and know, focus on looking at the reality of our own situation. Well, it doesn't have to be an either or. A broader way of asking the same question is, how can we who are fallen take advantage of association of those who are advanced? And in that advanced position, they're instructing us how we in our not so advanced position can get ourselves out of this mucky material situation. So the instruction is, he's taking stock of his own situation in a mood of humility, and that's the lesson. So in the mood of humility, so there's the lesson. How do I apply that? In the mood of humility, I can add to what I can relate, and I can add to it. Not only I see these circumstances, but moreover, we'll add another stanza. And my heart is so hard that although I recognize these things, I don't feel any of these things. Oh my Lord, see my fallen condition. I come before you. So that it precipitates the same conclusion. I come before you, one who is most fallen, and pray for your mercy. That you pick me up out of this condition. But so that has to come from your heart. And if that comes, then you might be able to soften your heart and feel the same, not only intellectually agree with, but feel some of the same feelings he's feeling as he's acknowledging his condition. Only we have a big advantage in one sense, because when Bhaktivinoda Thakur was writing this, he was elderly. And you're still very young. You don't have to live your life like he's described his. So you're in the like this first one, which you don't have, Bhubhya Tumare, so we'll try to get that for tomorrow. Encountering the Lord in the womb, praying, I'll always remember you, just get me out of here. And we were delivered, and then I got bewildered. You got that one? I got bewildered. My intelligence said I should serve you, but my intelligence got bewildered because everyone was goo goo gaga, look at the cute child, and fondling me, and you know, I got into it. And forgot, my intelligence got bewildered. And then my interest in studies awakened, and I just got absorbed in it completely. So we're that far, but we haven't gone all the way yet. Traveling from place to place, proud of my education, I grew wealthy and maintained my family with undivided attention. So we have, you know, we can see where that goes from reading Bhaktivinoda Thakur's songs and not be caught in that trap. So we can offer prayers to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I know that you understand this situation that I'm in. I'm praying to you for your mercy. And this is a Vaishnav practice. Or it's a realization of a devotee It's not only like this. This is just similar to the question that was asked yesterday about, this morning, about non-application. You know, we're trained to get A's in exams. We're trained to take information, package it, and put it back out again. Information processing, we're trained to do that. Feel things and become transformed into higher beings, we're not trained to do that. So, to a certain degree, our taking part in Krishna consciousness is processing things in the way that we've been trained. Information processing, get A's in exams, and still not changed. So that means we need to do something more than information processing. We need to internalize, and part of, but my heart is so hard. Then pray to one whose heart is not so hard. He knows the pain, because he's saying, I was in that position. It's Vaishnava to do that. Pray to advanced souls, even predecessor Vaishnavas. That you're giving this message because you're very compassionate. But you because you're so compassionate, you must also know my heart is hard as stone. The message is just splashing on the stone like heart. It's not softening the heart. Please show your special mercy and make my heart soft so that I will feel those feelings that you felt when you were writing these songs for people like me. I know you have that compassion. I know you have that power. Please break this heart and sort of soften this heart. So if I'm feeling those feelings, then maybe I'll do something about my condition of life. I may not get any A's in material exams, but I'll have fulfilled the purpose of life if I can enter that position. So please be very kind upon me. And in each of his songs, it's the end of the song is some prayer. He's praying to Rupa and Sanatana, their previous acharyas. Please teach me in the ways of Sharanagati. Or he's praying to the Lord, who's even, one can say, more distant than a previous acharya. Or Lord Chaitanya. So prayer. It's powerful. But prayer doesn't mean, please do it for me because I'm lazy and somebody said I should pray. So please do it for me, I'm helpless. Because that's not bhakti. Or it's not bhakti in its complete form. This is a very interesting dynamic of in the feeling oneself dependent upon the Supreme Lord. Do I just lie there or sit there or hope something's going to come into my life and make it different? The hope is there and the request is there, but then some practical activity that demonstrates what that feeling of heart is in the form of. So this is where this, I was pausing before, whether it was finished or not, but it's this threefold thing of with our words we express, within our mind we contemplate, and within our body we act, according to this instruction of surrender. Words we express. So we express as Bhaktivinoda Thakur is doing. If it's just a song, he says something, oh, I'm so, bad, and I take shelter of you, and it's just a song, and you walk away. There's no change. So the words have to be accompanied by a mental culture. And the mental culture has to be demonstrated by practical activity. Body, mind, and words. To the reverse. Worse. Words, mind, and body. And practice it. And practice it, and practice it, and practice. So if our heart is hard, practice softening. Words, mind, body, culture of surrender. Why would we want to do that? Because we want a relationship with Krishna. And so we want to abandon this material way of life, not abandon being responsible, but abandon materialistic way of life and dedicate ourselves to a life of devotion to Krishna. Being responsible in our life of devotion to Krishna, to all of our things that we're supposed to do, doing them very nicely in the mood of devotion to Krishna. How are you connecting these two things? You lost me. Do it again.
Humility, as I understood, is genuine dependence on Lord Krishna. But the conditioning is that when the proper respect...
Say it differently. Humility, saying the same thing in reverse, is humility means, you're giving it the positive, which is correct, abandoning acting through false ego. Namaha. Right? From that discussion that we had. Independent ability, strength, capacity. No. Dependent. Now, so I'm acting in a dependent manner. Something is going on. And now you said, when some honor or recognition comes, which is deserving, something like that, one who is humble doesn't accept that for themselves, but it does go somewhere. It goes to the proper place. Automatically. It's just deflected. No extra effort. Because one's humble, it's not a big deal. So someone says, oh, Pankaj, and they appreciate some service that you've done. You've done such wonderful work in your project at school, or you cooked such a nice offering, or you gave such a nice class, or you handled this very difficult situation with another devotee so nicely. So, offering some credit for some service that's done very nicely. So when humility is absent, one thing happens. And when humility is present, another thing happens. Immediately. Immediately. Because I'm not taking any credit for myself. It's not acting through false ego. I'm recognizing it's, you know, because just like this last song of the Dainya section, where I was in the darkest, most pitiable, decrepit condition, one Vaishnav saint came to me ready to instruct me in the ways of... So, because I, that you have no idea what my previous condition was. If there's anything that you're appreciating, see those people over there? They're the ones that have... Yeah.
So why is it important for us?
Those are two different... You're connecting two things. That there's some connection, but it's not a one-to-one correlation between the two. Jiva Goswami... Anyway... The Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva philosophy, as a philosophy, philosophically allows for devotional service to take place. Otherwise, we don't have a right. We have no claim to offer something to Krishna. For example, a glass of water, or our work, or our prayers, or anything. You know, it's anything. We're stuck being impersonalists. Well, so what's the Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva philosophy explains that this, your question is very similar to Akshay's. It's the relationship that does exist so that we can... There goes Sumit. Come on back, Sumit. Okay. That explains the relationship. So then we can offer to Krishna. So, but you were saying the relationship of the impersonal feature. Well, this is a very unique... What Prabhupada has done in this purport, and I spent some time explaining it, is how the impersonal feature is present even in material creation. That's a unique... rendering. Normally, one hears of and thinks of the impersonal features as the rays emanating from the body of the Lord. So it's also a feature. It's a feature. It's one of the three features of the absolute truth. And everything is resting. All, you know, substances, it's resting on that Brahman. It's like a cloud is resting in the sky. The sky is impersonal. The substance of water vapor and wind is blowing in the vastness of sky. Krishna gives that example himself in the ninth chapter. Similarly, all things are resting in me. So, and similarly, all manifestations of all the universe, the whole Mahatattva is floating in, like a cloud in the sky, is floating in the Brahma Jyoti. Right? Clear? So, we're within the Brahma Jyoti. We can't perceive it, but it's a feature of the Supreme Lord. And what is that Brahma Jyoti? It's emanations of rays of the body of the Lord. He's the cause of all causes. So the statement that Krishna Smarana made that you repeated is absolutely correct. We have no justification for rendering devotional service without a Chinta Bheda Bheda Tattva philosophy. Are you clear? More clarification? You're not sure? If something starts to surface again, you let me know. No? Yeah, you sure?
Maharaj, just one thing I understand when we use our terms like when, before, after, when it comes to material creations, we can understand that actually because the body that's beginning.
Yeah.
But when here it's being referred to the Purusha incarnation, that even the Purusha, Mahavishnu is also, came after serving before the Purusha incarnation. So how do you understand this? Because it's all acting on
the internal realm. Dr. Vinod Thakur says this is a defect of language. When describing things of transcendence. You're pointing out one. So it appears as an event in time, but it's not. It's describing a relationship. Cause of all causes. Krishna is the cause of all causes, including the cause of the Purusha avatars. So it appears to be a chronological causation relationship, but it's not. It's an ontological relationship. One is the cause and the other is an expansion. You're clear, you're sure? Okay. Okay, to approach the Supreme Lord, one has to cultivate simplicity. What if we're doing? We're not, this isn't very simple, this is very complicated. Supposing someone doesn't have the capacity to understand all of this we've just discussed, are they not eligible for pure devotional service? This isn't what your question is, but similarly, we're in New York, we're reading the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam, chapter 16, describing this is so many yojanas and that's so many yojanas and trees that are 800,000 miles tall. And so what if we can't understand all that? Are we not going to go back to Godhead? Can't become pure devotees? No. But there is a material manifestation that is complex. And it's knowable by Krishna's disclosing that. And some persons, like Lord Brahma-type persons, need to know about those things. Because they've got to create the whole thing and they have to understand it properly. So there is Vedic knowledge on all those subject matters. But if one, so the question is, what happened to simplicity? When dealing with complexity, the complexities of material creation, one has to remain, as Brahma did, in this sense, fixed in simplicity. This is service to the Supreme Lord. That's that vyavasayatmika buddhir ekeha kurunandana. So with that kind of simplicity, which only a devotee can do, ekeha kurunandana, then still accommodate complexity. Just like what this is very complex, but so is the subject matters that you're studying in the university. Very complex. So therefore, to be a devotee, just trash your education because you have to be simple. If that cannot be used in Krishna's service, then trash it. But if there's some way that it can be used in Krishna's service, then with the simplicity, the single-minded simplicity, I'm surrendered to Krishna. Now Krishna's given me this, as I mentioned yesterday, gift and burden called material intellect. We've got to use it. In part I got it because I wanted it. But now that I have it, I've got to use it. But I've got to use it in Krishna's service. So that's the simplicity. And we can spare ourselves with the complexities if we have a different capacity. But like Brahma, he had a desire to create. Big time desire to create. The whole, imagine, understanding the details of the workings of every living species and entity and the relationships and seasons and planets and universes and... Oh, man. He really wanted to know all that stuff and do all that stuff. But, so it takes a very high quality of simplicity, of pure devotion, single-minded pure devotion. He passed the test. Before he did all the complexity, he just chanted his mantra for 1,000 celestial years. He did nothing else. He's a Mahabhagavat. Like Bhaktisiddhanta, Prabhupada explained that Bhaktisiddhanta, before he began his preaching mission, he accepted an austerity like Bhaktisiddhanta, like Thakur Haridas. He chanted 1 billion names. He was qualified to be beyond the Varna and Ashram system. Then he accepted status within the Varna and Ashram system in order to fulfill the instruction of his spiritual master, to establish a preaching mission, which had all kinds of complexity. But he was able to handle the complexity in a very single-minded way. For Krishna, for Guru and Krishna. So that's where the simplicity comes in, and the complexity comes in because we're complex people. We just have to purify all of that, purify ourselves, and then purify all of that. Tadangam, the paraphernalia of our material intellects, and purify that by engaging it in the fire of devotional service. And it's there for those who have the capacity. Our acharyas have provided it, and that with that capacity comes responsibility. You have to use it in Krishna's service. Because if you don't have the mindset to use it in Krishna's service, you get wiped out. Because it'll use you in its service. And then you'll be in this dichotomy of the simplicity of sadhana and the complexity of your material work. We all know that one too well, right? Okay. Krishna is personally present within our heart. Anyway, very nice question. Krishna is personally present within our heart, and he says that he personally maintains and protects. How is he impersonal in the material world? Well, if we understand Krishna's presence, then he's not. But if you don't understand Krishna's presence, then it's very impersonal. Like, how can God let these disasters happen? The cyclone happen, and the hurricane happen, and this explosion happen, and, you know, some dear person lose their life, and some innocent child, you know, how does... God's impersonal. Anyway, not understanding the higher nature of the Supreme Lord, it's presented here very nicely. Like the government officer, government official, when he's in his office, it's all very formal and protocol, and you go sit and wait out, and even if you have an appointment, you go and sit and wait for, you know, hours and hours till the guy comes out. Had to get a visa to go visit Ukraine. Man, was that impersonal. And there's somebody sitting on the other side, and you gotta wait. It's like, it seems like it's deliberate. There's this glass, bulletproof wall. You can see they're on the other side. They're just not paying any attention to you. They got their back turned. You got an appointment, you know, and they've got their back. They're busy. It's awful. So then they, you know, he came out, took the papers, took the money, disappeared, and just sit there. And I was okay. I was just chanting. I was thinking, most people, and this is horrible. Treatment's not nice. But, you know, we can just be happy chanting Hare Krishna, but very impersonal. So it may seem that the workings of the material nature are also just going on in a mechanical way, and we're stuck, and there's nothing but, you know, the torture of it all. And thus one understands how to approach Krishna in a personal way. Yeah.
Maharaj, a question related to going back to Godhead. Sometimes it seems like at the time of death there will be some airplane which will carry us from this material world to other and sometimes it seems like we have to really transform our consciousness. And
yes.
What is,
otherwise you won't see that airplane.
So question is, what is it actually, or is it both of them, or what is it actually?
What is it actually?
Yes, what does it mean that we have to go back to Godhead? That means we have to just transform our consciousness? Or
yeah, back to Godhead is a consciousness, as well as a place. That's what the Lord said. His penance is me. And it's through this penance I have created. So it's a place, and it's a consciousness. You have to be in back to Godhead consciousness to go back to Godhead. It's pure devotion. That's back to Godhead. Then you're there. You have to wait for the airplane. You're there. Wherever you are. Right? There are scriptural statements. Like Yudhisthira says to Vidura, persons like you are in themselves places of pilgrimage. It's already back to Godhead. Wherever a pure devotee goes, it becomes a place of pilgrimage. Wherever Lord Chaitanya went, Maharaj Pratap Rudra wanted to establish shrines, each place, spiritual place. just because a pure devotee is there, it's transformed by their presence. Anything else? Yeah.
He has to act to set an example to the others. Even
that
the material world is a place of
forgetfulness
of Krishna.
Even the material world is a what?
A place where people forget.
Place where people forget Krishna.
So, for whom does he act to set an example?
For all those people that have forgotten. It serves as a reminder. It's like in the darkness there may be a light. And although it's dark, if you just, you have to be careful, but just follow the light, you can reach that spot where the light is coming from. Because where the spot is, where the light is coming from, there's life. So, Krishna's indication that one should set an example for others is, although they're in darkness and they're eyes are shut tight. What is that prayer that we say? Om Agyana Timurandasya Gananjana Salakaya. We offer respects to our spiritual master because he very mercifully opened our eyes with the torchlight of knowledge and enabled us to see. So that example setting is for people who have their eyes closed. They're in darkness. They may not follow. They may refuse to follow, and they may, in a very malicious way, try to hurt or torture or kill, cause great pain to such a selfless person, as has happened in history. But who is that person doing this for those very same people that are doing those things? Especially for the innocent. But even he's merciful for those that aren't so innocent. For everyone. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Independence. Always to feel inability without the help of Krishna, and I have this listed elsewhere. This means even I may have some. I presently do have some ability to do things. I can do a lot of different things. But surrender means that, although Krishna has given that ability, Krishna can certainly take that ability away just like that, and I'm aware of that fact, and therefore I feel myself dependent to utilize this ability that Krishna has given upon Krishna sanctioning my activity. So it's a consciousness that permeates, since not just in the background, it's in the foreground, and it's everywhere. It's just a state of surrender, that I'm feeling inability to execute. An independent spirit is dissipated, feeling dependent upon Krishna for executing things. And always to think oneself inferior to Krishna, here it is, even though one may have full capacity to perform something on his own. There it is, right? Nectar devotion. When one is substantially convinced that he is always protected by Krishna in all circumstances, that feeling is called reverential devotion. reverential devotion is executed in relation with the Supreme Personality of Godhead and with His other protected devotees. So now reverential devotion is, there's a contrast to this reverential devotion and spontaneous devotion. Awe and reverence, the Aishvarya, feature of the Lord, the splendor and spectacular awesomeness of the Supreme Lord, induces reverence, awe and reverence. So Prabhupada is saying this path of Sharanagati, in this manner, indicated by Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami and Lord Chaitanya and all these other references, it brings about reverential devotion. So in the first song, these six items are also listed in verses, in stanzas 3 and 4, starting with Tanya, Atmanivedana, Gopritve, Varana, Abhasha, Rakibe, Krishna, Vishwas, Palana. So they're identified. I don't know how far we're going to get, but at least we'll try to complete the first song, and maybe we'll go a little bit beyond that. There's the Rupa Goswami. Yeah. Okay. So, what I think I'm going to do is ask you to take your song sheets, and we'll just follow along. You can read it along or sing it along or whatever you like. Hope this works.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. You said the magic word. Just yes, it'll work. Okay. So you have your song sheets? Oh, this is a devotee who wants, okay. This is a devotee who joined the movement in New York. Now he lives in Vrindavan. He's like a music teacher in the Gurukul, Rati. Very petite Puerto Rican devotee. Very, 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 very wonderful singer. So he did this for me. I want to give him credit. You know, he recorded the vocals, then recorded the mridanga, then recorded harmonium, and, you know, just like dubbed on top of it. It's very nice. So it's there are some additional songs that you don't have sheets for, but this is the first one. And maybe one day you'll meet him and thank him for the nice recording he did.
Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Jiver Doya Hari Makashata Kriya Dhamo Sahapa Dhori Adyanta Dullabha Prema Kori Vare Dano Shikhaya Shuna Bhakti Prati Pula Bhava Bhajanaya
Introductory song to the whole Sharanagati set of songs. I'm going to have to rely on my notes quite a bit. He begins by glorifying Lord Chaitanya, like the invocation, stating that Lord Chaitanya came into this world to teach Sharanagati. And through this process of surrendering to Krishna, one can enter into the state of love of God, which Lord Chaitanya wanted to distribute. Connected to this first verse, there's a nice reference from Uddhava Gita, where Uddhava is offering a prayer to Lord Krishna, 11.19.9. O Lord, for the soul on the path of this perilous world, for the soul on the path of this perilous world, the existence of one who is afflicted by the threefold material miseries and is burning in a fire of sorrow, I see no other shelter except the umbrella of your two lotus feet, which shower nectar upon all who take refuge there. So, the comment is that there's this two-part system that Jiva Goswami is indicating. I'm in the perilous material world. I see the perils, and I could very much busy myself and give full attention to overcoming those perils and trying to find a life that is happy, free from those perils. But I choose not to move in that direction, but rather to take shelter of your two lotus feet, because that's the position of freedom from this perilous material existence. So, if one is driven by lust or any one of the six enemies of the Lord, one will not take shelter of the two lotus feet of the Lord, but one will be driven by the material forces. And so, materialistic and atheistic life is not one of surrender to the personality of Godhead. And conversely, surrender to the personality of Godhead defeats atheism, and it's opposed to materialism. It's not opposed to practical life, but it's opposed to the basis of materialism, which is I'm driven by my lusts and my hankerings and my longings. I'm just driven by that business. from Madhurya Kadambini. You're familiar with that, right? Madhurya Kadambini. So there are there's afflictions that are identified there. Living entities afflicted by avidya or ignorance and asmita, self-conceit, abhinivesh, which is a pervasive determination for finding enjoyment in worldly things, like a general materialistic outlook on life, driven to enjoy temporary things, abhinivesh. So avidya, asmita, abhinivesh, raga and dvesha, attraction and repulsion from various sense objects. So we're oppressed by those things, and material life means to do continual combat in the war zone of overcoming those oppressive features of material life. Sometimes it looks like we're doing a little better winning that war, sometimes we're not doing so well, sometimes we're smashed, sometimes we feel total, I can't do it anymore, and you know, there's lots of life stories and songs and poems and love songs and all kinds of stuff like that, that cinema story, you know, the whole thing of material portrayals of that struggle. And Sharanagati means no, I abandon all of that business and let me take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. In Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Sanatana Goswami, he speaks one verse, chapter 20 in Madhya Lila. Krishna Buli Se Jiv Anadi Bahir Mukha Ataiva Maya Tara Tare Deya Samsara Dukha. Forgetting Krishna, the living entity has been attracted by the external features from time immemorial. Therefore, the illusory energy, Maya, gives him all kinds of misery in his material existence. So, Bahir Mukha Jeev, this is a Anadi Bahir Mukha Jeev. Since eternally, we've been turning our attention away from Krishna. And when we do that, the illusory energy is there to spook us and give us miseries. And that's the way of material life, without shelter of the Supreme Lord. So it was anatta and sanatta, one who is without shelter or master, one who is with. And the position of being under the care and shelter of the master is the way of Sharanagati. So that's what is in the first stanza, verses 1 and 2 of this first song. Then in 3 and 4 you have the translations in front of you. There's the dainya, humility, followed by atmanivedana, dedication of the self, then accepting the Lord as one's maintainer, accepting with faith that Krishna will be our protector and favorable and unfavorable. Commented on this fifth one yesterday. The youthful son of Nanda Maharaj, Sri Krishna, hears the prayers of anyone who takes refuge in him. by the sixfold practice. So the comment made yesterday was that we may offer prayers to Krishna, but we the world is offering prayers to God, especially in times of danger or threat, offering prayers. But who will feel and receive that sense of protection and shelter? It's those who are following the ways of Sharanagati. Or somewhere in my many notes here, that there's some language to the effect that proportionate. Yeah. There's a direct quote in this Prapanna Jivanamrita, which, because I'm not organized, I can't pull it out right now. But the quote essentially is saying that to the degree of one's following this way of Sharanagati, to that degree will experience pure devotion. And in that experience of pure devotion will experience Krishna, our relationship with Krishna. So, as you can see, the way of Sharanagati is most important. So many nice points to be made that I'm not able to make because I'm not organized. So in 6 and 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, Rupa Sanatana Pade Dante Trina Kodi Bhakti Vinod Kodi Duhun Padadhuri. Bhakti Vinod Thakur is putting straw between his teeth, coming before Rupa and Sanatana, please instruct me in the ways of Sharanagati. So, now I'm going to go into the next song, which you don't have because I'm not organized. But maybe you do have it. No, you don't have it. It's it's introducing the section of Dainya, or humility. There's 8 songs, I believe, in that section. 7 songs. And here's the first one. Budhiya tumare sangsara ashiya. Sorry, I don't have the song, but here we go.
Jobane jakuna.
You too have that one. Very good. So page, bottom of page 1. Somehow you don't.
jobane jakona manau bajone oinu ki bhulagani dharmasmariya dini rakora dori ruta kona mani santar badaye samarambho ika kalaho Devo correr con la